your fault. Baby, it's not mine. I chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to talk about this recent Syrian attack by President Trump. And it's tied back to an earlier gas attack that occurred in Doha. And that's basically what our response was based upon. We're going to be playing some clips today that give us possibly some very good insights into the run-up, you could say, to this attack that occurred time-wise on Friday the 13th here, but it would have been, I believe, in Saturday the 14th over in Syria. And so it was a nighttime attack under the cover of darkness. And so we're first going to start off with a clip here of an interview that occurred after this attack had occurred with Zach. And Zach is a source for Alex Jones on his InfoWars. And he's had intelligence background, Army intelligence background, and he gives us some insights into what led up to, or what you could say motivated President Trump to launch this attack. So listen very carefully to what Zach has to say, and it's very insightful, and then I'll make some comments at the end of the clip. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, let's go to Zach. People say, oh, tell us your source. Oh, media doesn't give you your source. Zach has been Army Special Operations Command. He's been involved in Space Command, Geospatial, all that. Zach's coming on. I don't even know Zach's view. We'll see if he agrees with us where this is. Zach's been on TV, radio. He's a well-known name. His first name is Zach. Media hasn't published it because they don't give us credibility. But this isn't like some WikiLeaks or something you can't prove. Zach's real. Zach, am I wrong? I mean, or what do you say about this geopolitically, this threat of world war? What if the Russians strike back? I should be harping on that. What do you say?
Trump has just plastered his name on the side of another building. But sadly, it happens to be the brick and mortar of the military-industrial complex. The same military-industrial complex that Eisenhower and Kennedy warned of. This is bad, bad news. I'm just leaving MacDill CENTCOM, and the drums of war are beating as hard as they've ever had since 2003 in Baghdad and the shock and awe. This is bad news. This is really bad news. Everything you're saying is true. It's sad to hear it come out of your mouth. It was sad to see the news. I sent a text message and the email to Nico. We knew that they were going to come out with the false flag information that compromised deep state back Assad forces on video were going to do something that would push Trump's hand. You see, also.
Well, you said that months ago. Look for a false flag in Syria. We can pull it up. So you're saying they even had people addressed in Assad forces. That's what forced Trump's hand.
And these decisions were made out of 666 Fifth Avenue, not 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. This has everything to do with Jared Kushner.
Well, let's be honest. We're not anti-Israel, but there are elements in Israel that are under major pressure, and you're saying Jared Kushner.
Well, Jared Kushner happens to be the senior advisor to the President of the United States of America. Jared Kushner has no military experience. Jared Kushner has no defense experience. Jared Kushner has no geopolitical experience. But Jared Kushner happens to be in Saudi Arabia, all of the Gulf states, in Israel, making deals, wheeling and dealing. But it happens to be...
And we know the Saudis, which I want to be friends with, they've been meeting with Israel. What are the pressure on Netanyahu to do this? Because that's what CIA sources told me today, that this was probably going to come. Zero Hedge had a great article, six reasons Trump will strike it. I mean, Assad, forget Assad. He was a reformer compared to his dad. Where the West attacked Syria with Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and Trump was right. Our military's greatest moment was, you know, in the last 50 years was 5 years ago, saying they wouldn't be part of that, Zach.
Well, let's just get to it, and we could pull the video up as I'm.
Yeah, lay it out. Lay it out, because you, I mean, you're a great source.
And this is it, and this is very problematic. I don't care, though, because the kinetic implications of this are so catastrophic that I don't people understand. It's no coincidence that this happened on a Friday night into the weekend in the early hours in Syria there. What occurred is overwhelming and historically reprehensible. This is it. When Donald Trump made the address to the nation, just watch him. He's reading as if he's a hostage victim being threatened to read script.
By the way, guys, get ready when Zach leaves. Pull up Trump's statement on this. I totally agree with that. I noticed
cadence.
That.
It's not his regular cadence. He's reading directly word for word. We should have been alarmed when he doubled and we spoke.
So let me ask you, have they, from your sources, because I know who you are and we have other sources, did they carry out a coup? Are there guns to the president's head right now?
Yes. Unequivocally.
Politically or physically?
Both. Both physically and politically. Politically with some damning sexual things that who cares? Just own it. Who gives a damn at this level? But also physically because, like we said, he has plastered his name on the brick and mortar because he's a big real estate guy. He plastered his name on the brick and mortar of the military industrial complex. The last individual to truly, truly stand up to that complex had his brains blown out. In Dallas, Texas.
So and that's the problem is every time you roll over, not to the military but the criminal elements that run it, who the whole military hates. Every time they flush you down the toilet as an act of power. The only way you stand against them is not going along with them.
And the only way to really get to Trump is through his family. What he's accumulated, what he is, who he is, it's family and it's wealth. It's treasure and family, period.
And so they finally got him. What does that do with Michael Cohen raid? I agree. I think they flipped Trump.
Well, right before the Michael Cohen raid, you see the issues of him double crossing Sessions, saying if he knew he was going to recuse himself, he should have brought it up, basically losing faith in him publicly, which all this other alt-right and QAnon community said, you know, trust Sessions. We said 4 months ago, Sessions is compromised. Tillerson is compromised. Haley is compromised. We have the clip. We're on air talking about it. Nobody wants to listen about it because they take QAnon as gospel and it's a problem. And now
you were trying to be nice about QAnon, but I can confirm who you are and my other sources. I'm not bragging about this. I talked to six high-level intelligence operatives in D.C., and they said, this is bad what Trump's doing. He may have been flipped. And I didn't want to say that because they weren't sure. Everybody is really freaked out right now.
When he double-crossed Sessions duly, and I agree, he should have done it. Absolutely should have been done, but we've been calling it for months. And then Bolton came in, started cleaning the house in the national security team. This was a big problem. And I sent the email to Nico because the chatter was out there. The false flags were out there. 60 Minutes ran the piece months ago of Assad coming out saying, hey, why would I do this? This is suicide. I'm not doing this. Have we learned nothing from Hussein, Saddam the First? Have we learned nothing from Gaddafi, Muammar? Have we learned?
So let me ask you this. How compromised is Trump? He probably got shown fake intelligence, got stampeded into this. I don't want to fully abandon him over it, but we can't sit here and play patty cake with him about this. This is one of the most upsetting things in my lifetime. From your sources, Zach, you know, was out of your great source for viewers tuning in, what does this signify? Drudge has you linked up there right now. What does this signify? Because, I mean, we know Assad fought Al-Qaeda and ISIS. We know this is wrong, what's happening. We know Syria isn't trying to attack Israel. I'm pro-Israel. I'm pro-everybody over there. Everybody have their own country. Why is this happening? Who is behind it? Pachenik was on today and said Israel. You know, he's Jewish. He said Israel is behind this.
Well, like I said, these decisions were made, signed, and delivered at 666 Fifth Avenue. Jared Kushner's.
But Kushner's Chinese commie-controlled. So I'm not trying to just pick blame. I'm just going to, is it Israel? Is it China? Is it the Easter Bunny? Who is it from your intel?
It's so tied in at an interpersonal level. Kushner has the golden goose. Kushner is the husband of Ivanka. Kushner is everything. Listen, when you...
No, I know, but everybody blames Israel, and I'm not defending Israel, but it looks like Kushner is more Chinese. From your intel, is Kushner more Chinese-controlled or Israel-controlled?
Both. He is military-industrial complex-controlled. He is controlled by the highest bidder, and the highest bidder happens to be Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states at this point. Israel,
exactly.
China...
And that's why Israel's been meeting with the Saudi prince, where everybody's been, yeah. Zach, you're a really smart guy. That instead of me interrupting, give us your data dump, what you think's currently happening, what this means about Trump. I'll still support him on taxes and stuff like that, but I feel like I got raped in the you-know-what.
I know. I understand. And this is difficult for people to comprehend and understand. But we have to understand, if you put yourself in his shoes, if you put yourself in anybody's shoes like this, a man's morals become very malleable when your family, wealth, lineage, and future is on the line.
No, I get it. His family is compromised. Which is the same thing, Pachetic?
Look at him. You guys are going to listen. In the coming hours, when people wake up in the morning, all the sheep, all the people, all these individuals who have no idea are going to wake up to shock and awe and say, ha ha, hee hee, get distracted, go to Chick-fil-A in the morning, go do something trendy. And then on Monday, it'll be talking points, talking points, talking points. And the world goes on as usual. But that's...
You guys got to go to InfoWars.com/show. Well, Zach...
We have to understand, Russia has dedicated and invested 6 years of blood, sweat, and tears to have global peace become a actual...
Well, that's my next question. Reality. I'm not a Russophile. Stay there, Zach. I'm going to give you the floor in a minute. Hold on. I'm not a Russophile. Never been to Russia. But just as you say... They fought Al-Qaeda. They fought radical Islam. They fought on their borders. They did all this. They came in and helped us. Now they're being attacked. It's a total sellout. So what do you expect Russia to do? Talk about what Russia did. Finish your point. And then they said they're going to strike back. Will they strike back? I mean, they have every right under international law to strike back. But at the same time, they've not struck back so far, which shows major restraint. What the hell's going on where Trump said... Hillary and Obama funded ISIS and Al-Qaeda. They're the founders of ISIS in Syria, and now he's bombing for them. What do we do as viewers and listeners? Go ahead.
This is the ending of a chapter. This should be perceived the same as any historical book has ever been read. We are not subject or different from historical relevancy.
Right.
This is an empire, this is a complex, this is a period on a kinetic timeline that has been problematic and flawed from the jump. And what has just occurred, and I don't, how can we get really what happened on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? How can we really know what's going on with Trump? But when they raided the White House, Session was double-crossed, and Bolton came in, there was an obvious switch in the tweets, the text, the narrative, and the rhetoric coming from
the White House. Somebody else took over Trump's Twitter.
Yeah, and I could tell, and just, I'm telling
you. Are you saying the president's hostage?
Watch the video. That's all I can tell you. Watch the video.
Get that video ready on Trump tonight.
Expert. It's
Zach, you've been nothing but a good source, and I know who you are. Are you saying the president's hostage?
I'm on the ground on the most effective area of operation when it comes to special operations and intelligence networking in the planet today. Period. I'm right outside of MacDill Air Force Base, and the drums of war are beating harder than they ever had. This is not a joke. This is not a game. The national security and the president of the United States are under threat, without question. This is just out of character. If not, he's been drugged. If not, he's been threatened. I can't get into certain speculations, but the troop movements, the kinetic algorithms that have already been triggered, this is so problematic. And the fact of the...
You know, Trump may have been under my control, actually.
Oh, compared to others, you know him personally. Obviously, we've all had conversations and looked at him. Just watch. He's an older man.
What do you... I want to go back to Zach. Zach, who are you two on? What do you think they got on the president? Zach, what caused this?
What caused this was kinetic reality of the momentum of the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned of and felt, obviously, that John F. Kennedy received kinetically, and that anything less than what Donald Trump did today would have been received as a political assassination to him, his family, and severe detrimental repercussions to the economy and individuals within the United States.
So they said, you do this or we're going to blow your freaking head off.
Blow your freaking head off, blow the economy's freaking head off, and blow the majority of the fallacy that is the perpetuation of the military-industrial complex. That's reality that's been going on in this country. This is what Ron Paul, Rand Paul have backed for so long. This is what Donald Trump tried at his best, because I believe it was genuine. In fact, I know with firsthand knowledge that it was genuine.
Yeah, but here's my problem, Zach. Once he starts rolling over, to that Vice President Mueller, God, there's just no end to these scumbags. Why do we give in to the weakness? Why do we give in to some scumbags, Helen?
I don't know. We all had faith in Trump. We thought that he would be the one. He stood up to it. He stood up to the political correctness. He stood up to all of it during the campaign. But, you know, when you think about the military-industrial complex, you think about the power. I mean, who knows? They could have threatened to nuke the United States. No, you better, you know, do this.
Well, they brought him nuke on D.C. I think what Zach said, he can't give us classified stuff. But clearly, they brought him people dressed up like Assad uniforms launching it. And what's the president supposed to do? But I'm not going to defend that. This is horse crap. The rebels have been caught doing it three times. Zach, you're a smart guy. What else should people know right now?
I want everybody to Google the trolley effect. And what the trolley effect is this. And this is taught in all special operations units, all training, all psychological operations unit training. If a trolley is moving down a hill at freefall speed, no brakes, there's three people in one lane, 100 in the other lane, and you have a lever that will move it left or right. What do you do? This is the predicament that they hold over the head continually as a perpetuation of the military-industrial complex. So, yes, there was a credible threat. Yes, things are going on. But when he took that oath of office...
It's a triage effect. They go, sir, you got to kill some to save many.
And every special operator, everybody who knows what the hell is going on right now knows what I'm saying. Point blank.
Let's put that fake triage effect back up because you're absolutely on target. So is there salvage in Trump? Because here's the deal. I don't want to roll over on Trump. He's done a lot of good stuff. They're never going to stop attacking me, but it's seen as a sign of weakness. But I just deal with what's moral. What do I do at this point, Zach, in your opinion? I mean, what do I say to Trump? What do I do?
It's unexcusable. It's unexcusable. When you're in combat, the right decision has to be made. He was compromised. He understood he was compromised. If his ego got in his way and the family was the downfall, then there's just no excuse for it in the absolute aftermath of what's occurring. The real question is, what do you do if you're a Syrian father or mother, if you're a Russian father or mother, as you're waking up as we speak? That's the real question. We're looking at this in a vacuum. This is absolutely triggered the kinetic algorithms for war, period. There will be a response.
I want to talk about that, but here's the deal.
Second, is saying some very important things. He's saying that he believes, of course, according to his intelligence and sources, that President Trump was provided some fake or evidence about the attack that has been portrayed as an attack by Syria earlier in this month on that city, and the resulting casualties were caused by the Syrians, possibly with chlorine gas. So that's basically what they're saying there. And then what is important too is coming up next is Joe Skousen, and he's a retired Air Force pilot out of Utah. And what he's saying is, I don't know if he's really on this particular clip or not, but one of the points he made during the interview with Alex last night was that Trump is being presented a lot of information by all of these very well-educated and insightful generals and military that know the arms backwards and forwards. And perhaps Trump is at a disadvantage then because he may not be that acquainted with some of these arms. And so when they present these attacks or these that have occurred, then maybe he doesn't quite understand some of the techniques that have been used on some of these chemical bombs and so forth. So listen to this a second, but he makes some very, very important points here. And Alex has been very loyal to Trump, and then that's one of the points that Joe Skousen makes here at the beginning. So listen to this carefully.
You know, Alex, I watched your defense of Trump for the past several months, and of course, I had already turned the corner and decided that he really wasn't going to be trustworthy. But, you know, nobody could fault you for giving Trump the benefit of the doubt. Nobody could fault you for not having supported him right up to the end. To me, this is the end. You know, by being snookered twice, first last year in April 2017 with the false flag attack, and now this time. I mean, this is very, very serious, and I've lost total confidence in Trump, and our listeners should as well. We should not trust them. We should prepare that we're going to continue to go down and not believe the false promises of the Republican leadership or even Trump himself, who continues to be optimistic that he can still beat the... I don't know if he understands what it takes to drain the swamp, but he still thinks he can drain the swamp. But it's impossible when you can't recognize who's a part of the swamp and who isn't.
So let me ask this question, Joel, the world first brief, and I'm going to ask Owen this. We get the fact that he's getting broken. We get the fact he doesn't get it and he's compromised. But then you've got Hillary and the globalists and the left. How do you try to defeat them, win the midterms, and still, like rocket engines falling off, deal with Trump? How do you triage that? And then still move forward, because I mean, my gut's never wrong. I agree with you. At a spiritual level, I realize Trump has fallen. He was already fallen, but I didn't want to bet everything on Trump. It's just we wanted to fix things. We wanted it to be an easy win. We get it wasn't going to be that. And none of us are perfect. I'm not judging Trump. It's just painful to see this. So, well, I mean, you get my whole gestalt there. Joel Skousen, I mean, what do we do? What do you expect Trump to do?
I think we, first of all, have to continue to defend the proper positions on the issues rather than base it upon Trump anymore. In other words, we've got to decry once again this war, this disastrous intervention. We've got to preach and deliver the evidence that these are false flags that they're pulling on us. And we now have the information to go through and say that the deep state has infected. But I think the important thing to realize is that we can still encourage people to vote. Remember, and this is the key thing, the Trump supporters are still just as dead set against the establishment, just as dead set against the Democrats, especially...
Yeah, we brought Trump, he didn't bring us.
That's right, and that power still exists. But we've got to stop putting Trump in the front of our movement and say, let's go to principle. Let's talk about the specific issues. Let's fight for them and vote for people who will. You see, if we don't back these
exactly,
people,
we have to lead. If he wants to follow, that's his issue. But he is. They attack him, so we build him up. You're right. He has really, on a lot of fronts, failed. So we have to just go forward with what's right. If he wants to follow us, that's fine. But Trump is falling.
And we've got to back every single congressional candidate that's willing to take a tough stand against this war in Syria, and there are very, very few.
Well, Joel, let me ask you this question, and not about my ego. I want your real counsel. They have got PIs following me 24 hours a day. They've got all these shows on Comedy Central, CNN, everywhere, lying when I say that I'm not that important. I don't think I'm that good, quite frankly. They are obsessed with me. They are after me. Well, they are all over the place misrepresenting. What do you think they're doing? Why are they so scared of InfoWars? Because, I mean, okay, we reached 80-something million people election week. It was like 30 million before. They pressed us down to 30, 40 million a week. We're still there. It's our main audience. But they are, I mean, they are trying to pay everybody I know money to lie. No one will actually do it. They are. And I said on air what they were doing. It is, I don't feel sorry for myself, actually. I feel blessed. But it is insane what they're doing. And I'm not that good of a guy. So let me ask you, as a wise guy, I don't mean as a cliche, a smart guy, why are they after me so bad? Because I need to know this, because I don't get it.
I think some of the important points that Joel was making was that Alex was so disappointed last night in this attack and Trump not catching on to the possible previous attacks being false flags, possibly, and not really, you know, catching on to what's going on. And he's got more of these hawks around him now in the White House. So I think that's where Alex is really disappointed in what has been going on up there. So that's really why he was so downtrodden. I mean, he was disheartened, Alex Jones was, last night on this special. And in a way, I don't blame him a bit, because he put his heart and soul in supporting Trump for president, and for the president to be manipulated like I believe Alex believes he was on this attack in Syria. It's disheartening for Alex Jones. But anyway, that's an important clip to listen to. And what I'm going to finish up with is a clip by that's actually some information. Jerome Corsi, who works for Alex, has been discussing the QAnon, you say, postings with a group. And they'll go on live in the afternoon or the evenings for an hour, hour and a half. And so this is a clip out of that discussing what Jerome Corsi believes Trump's position is on this. And I believe Jerome Corsi way back did come out of some intelligence, you know what I mean, position. And so he's really akin to that. His allegiance, of course, is to the government to some degree. But he believes as much of what Alex is saying. But he thinks that sometimes Alex is way off base sometimes. But he's still loyal to Alex, is what he says in this clip. But I believe that Jerome Corsi, his religious, I think, affiliations, very fundamental and very close to Israel and so forth and like that, thinks it makes his viewpoint less objective. And so here, listen to this. And this is about QAnon and what he had to say about the attack, and then his interpretation along with his fellow researchers on this QAnon channel. So listen to this a second here, for a few minutes.
My take on this is that Donald Trump launched a limited airstrike on Syria. They attacked, I think, three targets that were all related to either the production of chemicals for warfare or storage of those chemicals. There were a number of other targets that were looked at, but they would believe they were situated such that the civilian damage, the collateral damage, would have been too great. And so therefore, these targets were not chosen. And the ones that were chosen because they believed they could hit them and hit them effectively without civilian casualties. Now, what QAnon said in the post today was trust POTUS. They said Sparrow Red, which, you know, sounds like a, you know, missile attack. Sparrow, of course, being a bird. Missiles only. And that the intel was good. In other words, that the White House did have good intelligence that Syria was involved in chemical weapons production and use. Now, first of all, I've had a lot of people who commented on the concern that John Bolton is now in the White House, and John Bolton is going to be a neocon, and so therefore President Trump has gone over to the neocon side, and he's now decided to wage war all over the place. I don't think there's any justification for that. First of all, I've known for a long time John Bolton, and John Bolton does come out of the same group that, you know, were Richard Perle during the George W. Bush administration, with a whole group in the Pentagon, were such that they were neocons. They were advocating war, and they believed they could do things and change things with war. But I don't think that John Bolton has been 100% into that. He is mostly about Iran. John Bolton's main concern has been Iran. I talked to John Bolton about Iran going back to 2005 when I wrote Atomic Iran. I've known John Bolton a long time. I don't think John Bolton is one of these kind of guys who's going to be encouraging war. And even if he did, I don't think President Trump is going to be listening to him. Hold on just one second. Okay, so I'm back. The point is that President Trump decided to launch a limited strike like he did about a year ago. And I don't see any plan to follow that up with land troops. I think President Trump is going to be pulling out of Syria. And I take seriously the various posts that QAnon did that exposed the entire Syrian war, civil war, was a byproduct of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama wanting to, and John McCain. And we even found the picture with Paul Ryan and this Muvaz Mustafa, who was one of the Syrians in soccer that was advocating this idea of moderate rebels. When John McCain, John Kerry, Obama were trying Hillary, they're all trying to convince Congress to authorize them to send weapons, which they did then clandestinely and illegally from Libya through Turkey into Syria that end up arming ISIS. I mean, QAnon pointed out effectively that Hillary Clinton and McCain and Obama created ISIS and funded ISIS and armed ISIS through this moderate rebel idea in Syria in 2013. Now, I don't think that suddenly President Trump has forgotten that. I think that he's decided that he wanted to have a military strike to make a point about chemical warfare, which has disturbed President Trump, and he has these nightmares about 1917 and the gassing that was done in World War One, and doesn't want that back into the warfare techniques that are going to be used by rogue states. He has a particular aversion to the gas attacks, and it served the purpose of showing again that he's not colluding with Russia, that he's not, you know, how can you argue President Trump is in bed with Russia when he's launching this kind of an attack against Syria, whose major supporter, Assad's major supporter at the moment, is a combination of Russia, Putin, and Iran. But Trump wanted to make it clear to both Russia and to Iran that just like with North Korea, he's not going to tolerate the development of nuclear weapons in Iran, probably going to end the agreement, this whole farce of the John Kerry negotiated deal with Iran. And I think the attack, again, served limited purposes, but it really diffused the argument that he is secretly in collusion with Russia. Okay, now let's, I know not everybody agrees with this, so go ahead and let's have some debate on the issue.
Dr. Corsi, I'd just like to, you mentioned this soccer Buaz character. He actually showed up and praised Trump in a Fox News interview this morning.
Oh, did he really?
Which I thought was almost comical.
It's ridiculous. I mean, they won't give up trying to get Trump to enter the war. They'll try, and, you know, if Trump were going to expand the U.S. presence, the military presence, the ground troop presence, in Syria, which Trump is not going to do. He's just not going to do it. And he's made it clear that he's not going to do it. At the same time, people are asking over here in the live chat about Zach from InfoWars. I really have not followed Zach from InfoWars. If people are wanting me to talk about Zach, I guess I'll have to pay some attention to it. But it's probably going to be the same as I just said about Alex Jones. That is, Alex has his reasons for working with Zach, and I'm sure Zach is not one of my sources or one of my guys. It's one of Alex's, so I really don't have a lot of comment on it and haven't paid a lot of attention to what Zach says. If Alex, you know, not everything that Alex does am I either consulted with or do I, you know, it's Alex is doing his own thing. And if he wants guests and various people to talk to, I'm going to suppose that Alex has a reason for that. And that in general, I think even when Alex sometimes does get a little crazy or goes a little bit off track or gets a little bit deeply into something, he's still drawing an enormous amount of attention and a challenge to the mainstream media, and I support him. You know, I'm basically not, if people want me to oppose Alex Jones or criticize him, it's not going to happen. I work for Alex Jones.
Yes,
and I'm loyal to that.
I think we can all respect your position. And like you said, you're working for Alex in the capacity of contributing with him. And I don't think it's fair to ask you to chime in on that stuff.
That was Jerome Corsi with his study group, research group on QAnon's postings. And what he's saying is almost apologetic to what Trump did last night, launching that attack. And he feels justified. He's helping to justify it. And QAnon is saying, please trust the president on this, I think in his postings. And but if Zach is right, who you heard this, Zach being interviewed by Alex earlier on, if false information and evidence was presented to Trump and passed off as legitimate evidence of the Syrians' culpability in the attack, then what do we have here? We're just, everybody's just singing a song and sort of floating along, you know what I mean? And just getting the job done, see? But what I see is very, very wickedness in high places, and I don't trust any of these people. Are we going to trust the people, the deep state that are attacking Trump, and then we default back to this intelligence gathering, you know what I mean, institutions to tell us the truth on this deal too? At this point in time, right after Trump said he's pulling out, Ron Paul, all of these people, to a man, said that it's not the motivation, okay, for Syrians is not there to launch these attacks. And so I believe in Ron Paul's assessment and judgment. And his son is saying similar things. So, and also there was a colonel interviewed the other night on Fox. He voiced these opinions that were similar to this, and there were other panelists on there that trashed him, see? You know, so this is pretty sensitive issue about Syria and so forth, and about these, they show these photographs of these dead children, these children that are very ill, and they're saying that they were the victims of this attack. So it creates a lot of sympathy in a very, very, you know what I mean, a sensitive nation to the, because they're children. But anyway, that's sort of my view right now. We've got to wait, and I put this up on Twitter. We should have waited. There's an on-the-ground group now that's investigating this on the ground in Syria today and looking into this and interviewing people. And I believe Trump should have waited until after the initial report of that was done. So I think he jumped the gun a little bit on this. But okay, coming up next, we're going to end with Judicial Watch. Mr. Farrell there, yeah, is giving a report on the A1 Brothers scandal, and that Deborah Wasserman Schultz and she got them embedded into all of these other U.S. congressional offices, passing them off as IT experts. So coming up next to that, we're going to finish it off with that. And if we have time, I'll make comments at the end. Otherwise, we're going to finish with the Judicial Watch report. But thank you tonight, and God bless everyone. And I just hope we can work through this thing after this attack on Syria. But we need to be more cautious, in my opinion. But thank you for listening. If we have time, I'll come back with some closing comments. Thank you for listening.
I'm Chris Farrell, and this is On Watch. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate taking your time to go over some important Judicial Watch investigative developments. Today, I want to bring us back to a case that we will never let go of, that we've sunk our teeth into, and we will drag to the ground and get the facts out of, and that is the very dangerous national security crime case concerning the Awan gang up on Capitol Hill and their running of the Democratic caucus servers, their servicing of 40-some-odd Democratic House members, all of their email, all of their websites, and the fact that the Awan gang, I call them a gang, it's really a couple of brothers and the rest of their family members and another outside person, but it's just handy to refer to them as the Awan gang. The Awan gang's theft of not just computer equipment, but logging on as members of Congress, downloading terabytes of information off of the Democratic Caucus server, really a grave, grave national security situation that it appears by all instances to be a crime, and it sure looks like they were deeply involved in it. We don't have a ruling from a court. We have open investigations. But let's just go through a little bit of a chronology here to remind you of how bad it is. And look, when I talk to you today and I walk through this chronology, I'm doing it in the, to educate, help inform you as citizens of what's going on with your elected leaders in the House of Representatives. But I want you to take action. I want each and every one of you out there, if you're so inclined, to call your members of Congress and ask them, what are you doing about Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the House Democratic Caucus server and the Awan brothers, and ask for answers. Ask for your members of Congress to come out and make a statement. They're all curiously quiet on this, and there really needs to be sufficient pressure exerted so that this incredible national security crime and the scandal around it isn't buried. Because, frankly, they want you to forget about it, and we're not going to let that happen. So let me walk through a little bit of a chronology. First of all, credit where credit is due. Luke Rosiak, Daily Caller, has done groundbreaking work on this. Hat tip to him, and our thanks. In some instances, we've collaborated on various portions of this investigation. But he really broke the story. He's developed the story. He's pursued it like no one else has. So our thanks to Luke. But let me walk through this chronology. I want you to track it carefully because I want to give you the facts that you can then turn around and demand accountability from your members of Congress. So let's go back to April of 2016. That's a pretty long time ago. That's 2 years back. So 2 years ago, the House Committee on Administration, which sounds like a really boring sort of title, but the House Committee on Administration, those are the folks that are charged with oversight of kind of the day in, day out, just what it sounds like, administrative or administration of how the House operates and runs. That's really boring stuff like office furniture and assignments and all those sorts of things. But importantly, it also has to do with information technology and all the computing services, all the information services that go to House members. So this Committee on Administration is informed that the Awans, the Awan gang, that they're stealing, that they're taking equipment from the information systems support activity of these House Democratic members, 40-some-odd. And, of course, those services also allow the Awans access into people's emails and their websites and everything else. So they're taking hardware, and that report is then referred over to the Inspector General for an investigation. And as I'm apt to say and be quoted on, you know, the office of an inspector general is two things. It's the office of cover-ups, sadly, and it's also an office where the truth goes to die. And we're not going to let that happen. And you're not going to let that happen. So it's April 2016. The House Committee on Administration is told the Awans are stealing. The House Committee refers it over to the inspector general for an investigation. However, while they're under investigation, the Awans are left on the House network. So they still have access, they're still working, they're still doing what they're doing while they're under investigation, which is highly unusual, suspicious. You would think that at a minimum they would be either restricted or suspended, but not in this case. So now that's April. Now let's go through all the way through the spring and summer. We get to September of 2016. And the Inspector General finally completes their investigation, and they come back to the two House leaders, the Speaker, Mr. Ryan, and the Minority Leader, Ms. Pelosi. And they say, hey, look, this really isn't a case of stealing. It's a case of hacking. So the Awans are getting into things, getting into places in the information systems world where they shouldn't be. The Awans are getting access to servers. They're logging in as members themselves. So instead of Congressman so-and-so logging in, the Awans are using that ID and password to get into the actual members' accounts. Beyond that, they're also downloading terabytes of information off of the servers. Now, what are they taking? And once they take it, where's it going? These are, you know, sort of investigative 101 type questions. But we don't have answers yet to that. The IG singles out, in particular, the House Democratic Caucus server and says that that server in particular, they designate as being key evidence. So you've got 40-some-odd House members. You've got the caucus server. You know the Awans are in there. And the Inspector General says, forget stealing, it's hacking, it's data, it's manipulation of information. That's the crime. So they take the investigation away from the IG, and who do they give it to? The Capitol Police. Now, I have great respect for the Capitol Police. I'm not knocking them or saying that they're bad. All I'm saying is I don't think that they necessarily are the most sophisticated when it comes to doing these sort of cyber crime investigations. Perhaps they are. I could be gravely mistaken, but my instincts and my experience tell me that they're not. Nonetheless, the Capitol Police get the investigation. And why? Because they want to keep it close hold, right? The leadership wants to keep the investigation a Capitol Hill, a legislative branch question or issue or function. They don't want to refer it out to any sort of executive branch investigative agency, because then they would lose control of the story. In this case, though, they've got control of the Capitol Police, and they want to keep the investigation in-house. So one of the concerns that they use in order to constrain the investigation and keep it under the Capitol Police is what's called the Speech or Debate Clause. And that's an important clause in the Constitution, which says that, you know, members of Congress, they have their own sort of independence, right? It goes from everything to what a member can say on the floor of the House during proceedings to members of the House not being arrested or held if they're on the way to the House for a vote. And it reinforces the independence of the legislature and allows them to function and sort of police themselves. And so that's the thinking, or that's the legal theory under which the case is moved from the Inspector General to the Capitol Police. We then move along a little later. This is now late fall into early 2017. So the time frame is November to January 2017. The Awans now are furiously liquidating assets. This comes down to homes that they own, businesses that they have. There's argument that they committed wire fraud and that they wired money back to Pakistan. So they're shifting assets. They're liquidating what their holdings are here, and they're shifting money furiously to Pakistan. At the same time, Awan's wife flees the country. That's a story unto itself. For whatever reason, even though she was held or inspected or questioned concerning the amount of cash that she had on her person at Dulles Airport, she was still allowed to leave. So the caucus server, remember we talked about how important that server was, because that was the sort of the evidence of hacking that the IG had uncovered. While all this is going on, in this criminal probe of a hacking event, the server itself is stolen. It's gone. Poof. So the key piece of evidence is now suddenly missing. So what's interesting about that is, at the time, the chair of the House Democratic Caucus, Javier Becerra. Does everybody remember who Javier Becerra is? Javier Becerra is now the Attorney General of California. So he had been a House member. He left the House, went back to California, and became the California Attorney General. So he's the guy that you've seen in news reports flaunting California's position that they will not follow federal law. And he gives these sort of smirking, condescending news conferences or press conferences where he announces how California is going to be a sanctuary state and they're not going to follow federal law. And from a philosophical or legal point of view, he wants to undo what the country went through in the Civil War, right? He's exerting a states' rights argument that is a settled matter with respect to what states can or can't do. And even in the Constitution, look, federal matters are controlled by the federal government, and certainly immigration is a federal matter. Well, that's Becerra. So the guy you see on television as the Attorney General of California, I think he even threatened to arrest the Orange County Sheriff. That's the guy I'm talking about. At the time, he was the head of the House Democratic Caucus. Becerra has knowledge of the theft of the server. And it would be interesting if a reporter out there would pose a question to him while he's kind of strutting about how California is going to break away and do their own thing. Let him answer what happened to the House Democratic Caucus server, since arguably it was his property when it was stolen. A curious question, something that needs to be addressed. We'll see if he would deny that it was stolen or not. Let's move along now to February 2017. So now President Trump's taken office. The Awans are finally, realize it was April 2016, now it's February 2017, 10 months after the fact, the Awans are finally banned from the server and from the House computing systems by the Capitol Police. And it's really the same evidence that they've had for months. There's no new information necessarily. But somebody at the Capitol Police decided, you know what, we can't leave them on there with access when we believe that they're not only stealing equipment, but they're also downloading terabytes of information and accessing members' emails. So 4 months later, a lot of foot dragging, but they finally get banned from using the system or from being on the House system. Interestingly, at this point, the Committee on Administration, they now sort of reverse the story, and they stop talking about hacking, and they go back to the original claim of theft, which is very curious, right? I don't think there's a clear explanation as to why. But for whatever reason, they stop talking about hacking, and they go back to using language about theft, even though you have an IG report and you have Capitol Police looking into the matter with respect to hacking. They don't want to talk about that anymore. In April 2017... Imran Awan, that's the principal guy, member of the gang. He's still in the building, still in one of the House office buildings, working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. He's still there. And he's banned from connecting to any of the networks, but he's supposedly a consultant, whatever that means, working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, still being paid after all that I've just described in the last few minutes. He's still floating around doing whatever it is that he's doing. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz has yet to give, at least in my opinion, an adequate answer as to exactly what his role was and what his duties were. Nonetheless, he's being paid your tax dollars in action for floating around the building consulting. There's this kind of breakdown that he has, it appears, because in that same month of April 2017, Awan takes Debbie Wasserman Schultz's laptop. And he has a note on it, he sticks it in the backpack, and he leaves it in a phone booth in one of the House office buildings. This is an extraordinary thing. The police recover the backpack with the laptop in it and the note that he's written, and that's all subject of a criminal inquiry. That's something that Debbie Wasserman Schultz ends up threatening the Capitol Hill police chief over because they refuse to return her laptop to her. And in fact, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she goes so far as to hire the guy, an attorney, who was the former general counsel of the House of Representatives, to represent her in an effort to stop the police and prosecutors from even looking at the laptop. Again, back to the speech or debate clause question, where they cannot have their papers and their possessions searched or gone through. Because they're allegedly inviolate, even though this is a piece of evidence in a crime. So now we have to kind of do a review of all this in the sense that, let's be clear, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, and Nancy Pelosi, they know all of this is going on. Everybody who's in a leadership position in the House of Representatives, and for that matter, the Senate, knows this is going on. They've let this guy Awan run around for months afterwards on the payroll, knowing that his gang had access to 40-some-odd members of the House, their emails, their websites. They even had access to the emails and websites of members of the House who were on, let's say, the House Intelligence Committee or Foreign Affairs. This is a grave national security issue. This is a matter that should be a screaming headline every day of the week. And for the most part, what have you heard about it? Very little indeed. So that's why I'm here today, to call your attention to it once more. And even in the follow-up, you know, the Washington Post did their own investigation of this. They bought into the, oh, it's just a theft issue. These guys were stealing equipment. It's much more serious than that. It's much more grave than that. And I think it is imperative. It is really incumbent upon you to demand from your member of Congress at home what their position is on the Alwan brothers or the Alwan gang and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. What are they going to do about this case? Because so far they're really trying to keep a lid on it. The ringleader, Imran Alwan, tried to make a run for it and was leaving the country and was apprehended before he got to Dulles Airport. He was charged with bank fraud violations with respect to some of the liquidation I was talking about before. They liquidated all their assets. They took money. They were wiring it overseas. He's been held on bank charges. He has not been held on espionage charges. And so there's sort of this suspended animation now where months have gone by with not a lot of new information. And you have to ask yourself, why? Why is this being suppressed? Why is this being withheld? Is it because it has to do with 40-some-odd members of Congress? Because it has to do with the theft of a Democratic caucus server? Because it touches the current serving Attorney General of California? Because Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who had been a Democratic leader up until the time her own party bounced her for really steering the election in favor of Hillary Clinton and away from Bernie Sanders, all those scandals kind of broke in a cascading fashion. All this ties together. You know, if the Democratic Party servers, the DNC servers, were hacked and they hired some outside group called CrowdStrike to do an investigation instead of the FBI, and then at the same time that's going on, the Democratic caucus servers are hacked and this guy Alwan is involved, yet they're so afraid to let go of him or to fire him outright, they keep him on the payroll, while they know that his wife has fled the country and he's been engaged in wiring money overseas. This stinks to heaven. I mean, I don't know how much more one would need to demand a full public accounting of what's been going on. And so far, you've gotten a lot of nothing. It's really been silence on this issue. So I bring this up again. It's one of my favorite topics because I think it's one of the most neglected news stories out there. Thank goodness for Luke Rosiak and the good investigative reporting he's been doing. He won't let go of it either. And you can trust the Judicial Watch, the folks here, some of the fine investigators that I have working on my staff, we're not going to let go of it either. But I think that it really behooves you, as a member of the public, you're owed answers on this. Your tax dollars went to pay the Alwan gang. And your member of Congress should have a position on this. What's he going to do? What's he or she going to do? What's their public stance? Have they asked for Debbie Wasserman Schultz to give an accounting? This is grave stuff. These are real national security crimes. This is real penetration of classified and unclassified computer networks. Who knows what the Alwans were downloading? And where did that information go? So there's more to tell in this story. You can trust that we're going to pursue it vigorously. But I think it would be a good idea for you to pursue it as well. So contact your member of Congress and ask them what their position is on this scandal. And ask them what they're going to do concerning their colleague, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and the other 40-some-odd members of the House Democratic Caucus that were engaging the services of this Alwan gang. You're owed straight answers. And you can rest assured that Judicial Watch will continue to pursue this question and get you all the answers that we can. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Chris Farrell, and this is On Watch.